its current state for Wednesday. We're glad you're along. I'm Mark Bayshore. For decades, Michigan law automatically sentenced juvenile offenders to life in prison without parole for certain violent crimes. But in 2012, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that mandatory life sentences for juvenile offenders amounted to cruel and unusual punishment. The justices did not say if the ruling applied retroactively to those already in prison, though. And officials in several states, including Michigan, decided it did not. This Monday, the Supreme Court revisited the issue and said that, in fact, those inmates are entitled to a chance at resentencing or parole. In Michigan, that means more than 350 inmates serving mandatory life sentences for crimes they committed as juveniles could soon be eligible for one of those options. Later on, we'll hear from a prison reform advocate who says the ruling in Montgomery v. Louisiana gives those inmates a shot at a fair sentence. But first, we talk to someone who is not cheering the court's decision. Jody Robinson is with the National Organization for Victims of Juvenile Murderers. She joins us now to talk about how the families of victims murdered by teens will be impacted by the court's ruling. Jody, welcome back to Current State.
Thank you, Mark.
What's been the reaction from the victims' rights community in the wake of this decision?
Well, obviously, as you can imagine, a lot of devastation and heartbreak, disbelief. Many of us are shaking our heads still a few days later, wondering how this happened, why it happened, like I said, really, and it's just extraordinary heartbreak at this point, knowing that all of us will be reengaging in what was the most horrific time of our lives. We're called back to court to do it again.
This, as our listeners can probably tell by the emotion in your voice, this is an issue that hits very close to home for you. Your brother was murdered by a teenager who was sentenced to life without parole. What are you individually feeling right now?
Again, you know, it's a lot of disbelief at this point. I've worked very closely with so many victim families, and I feel their pain on top of my own. Sorry. I didn't realize it would hit me like this.
Understood. Let's
move
on.
There's the physical, there's the emotional, on top of the mental anguish that comes along with the re-traumatization of something like this.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I have spent years in therapy, years in other means of trying to recover from the initial shock of losing my brother 26 years ago, and then threw myself into the victims' rights realm of working with victims, and I worked very hard to get over what I was having night terrors. I had my first one the day this verdict came down, but I haven't had one in 4 years.
Mm.
I have been up for two nights, night terrors. That's the reality of for victims, what is going on.
Well, now, while the court's decision does allow juvenile offenders who were given sentences of life without parole a chance to argue for early release, that doesn't mean that all of those prisoners will get parole. Are you worried that it won't be strict enough?
With the way that our justices reworded Miller in the new Montgomery v. Louisiana, I am worried about that. I am very worried about that. I'm concerned for society as a whole, the way our justice system is turning. We have these advocates that have spent billions of dollars. They have money, power, and resources. They have media backing, so on and so forth, that have pushed their agenda. And they're placing very little regard to human life. We're talking about offenders that, in many cases, in most cases, premeditatively took another's life.
How would you respond to people who say these prisoners committed these crimes at such a young age that they deserve a second chance?
I really don't believe that is the case. My brother doesn't get a second chance. All these other victims They don't even have a voice in this discussion because they're dead, quite frankly. I understand the whole push of you know, they deserve a second chance. They could rehabilitate themselves.
What about those cases? What about those cases where a young person has...
Well, I would like, I've tried to be a voice for victims. I've tried to be a voice in this whole juvenile justice reform. But you talk about rehabilitation. What are the standards for rehabilitation? If you went to school and got your GED while you were in prison, you're rehabilitated. What are those standards? Because I look at it as if I'm locked in a cell and I'm told I'm staying there the rest of my life, and then you have an offender advocate that comes in and says, we're going to work with you, we've got this chance to get you out, but you have to do A, B, and C. You got to go to school, you got to, you know, not get into a fight, and you have to eat, you know, show up when you're supposed to. I'm going to do that.
Jody Robinson.
Gain release. That doesn't mean my brain has magically changed the wiring and I will never kill again. There's, you know, for you to take a life, knowingly, meaningfully, planned and execute taking another person's life, there's something off there. You have some bad wiring. I don't know too many people in my life that could actually do that.
Jody Robinson is with the National Organization for Victims of Juvenile Murderers. We're talking about the Supreme Court's recent decision to allow those sentenced to life in prison without parole for crimes they committed as minors to seek resentencing or parole options. Jody, are there ways that you think the states could make this process less painful for the families of victims?
I think that it's going to be painful any way that we have to go about this. I think that the most important thing for states to do is, and something nobody's really worked at yet, is there are hundreds across our nation, hundreds of victims that aren't even aware that this is going on, I'm sure. Because unfortunately, with a life without parole sentence, you walk away from that, different than the death penalty, different than a parolable sentence. You walk away with that with some sense of closure. You never have to look at this again. They're in jail for the rest of their lives. Even with the death penalty, when you go into that, you know there will be appeals. There will be years of, you know, until that final execution. Here, many victims walked away. They didn't register because there was no reason to. There was no parole. And many of these victims don't know. This has been a hot topic for the last 2 years. I've had a lot of victims go to my website and reach out to me and, just in the last year, what's going on? And get that devastating blow that, and my fear is we're going to go through this. States will start to allow parole hearings. Victims will not be included because they're not aware. Or they're not notified because they didn't register to be notified. And even the extreme cases, somebody gets paroled, and this has been a nightmare many have talked about, is they'll get paroled, I won't know about it, and I'm going to bump into them in the grocery store, at the mall, the gas station. And for a victim, that could be something that pushes them, you know, to their breaking point.
Jody Robinson is with the National Organization for Victims of Juvenile Murderers. We've been talking about the recent Supreme Court decision that opens up the possibility of parole for over 350 Michigan inmates sentenced to life in prison for crimes they committed before they turned 18. Jody, thank you for talking with us today.
You're welcome.
Now we turn to someone who says the decision in Montgomery v. Louisiana is a step forward for justice in the United States. Kristen Staley is the deputy director of the Michigan Council on Crime and Delinquency. Kristen, welcome back to Current State.
Thank you for having me.
The decision in Montgomery v. Louisiana is one in a string of Supreme Court decisions over the last decade or so that have moved toward a more lenient stance toward juvenile offenders. Can you talk to us about some of the court's rationale behind those decisions?
Absolutely. This case that was delivered this week is absolutely a step forward. once again, we're seeing that the federal government and the United States Supreme Court is saying that children are constitutionally different than adults. They are making a stance showing that Miller v. Alabama was the right direction, and this case completely seals that case, where not only should we be applying this this change in the law retroactively, but that we should be thinking towards how can we change ways and ensure that children are treated differently in the justice system, because we know that young people, as the court very clearly delineates, that they have diminished capability, that they have a greater prospect for reform, that they're more vulnerable to negative influences from outside pressures, from families and peers, and frankly, that their character really are just not as well formed as adults. We know that from research. We know that from academics. And the highest court in the country has taken that in and said that this should be a factor when we're considering our justice system.
You heard the serious doubts that Jody Robinson has about the capacity for rehabilitation here. Is that the major hurdle here that you face in trying to persuade more people that this is justified, that a lot of people feel, as Jody Robinson does, that rehabilitation simply is not as available to these people as we might be led to believe?
I think that's one aspect of it. First of all, my heart does go out to Jody and victims like her and families like that across the country. I think that we cannot take away from the fact that, horrible crimes were committed. There were people that died. There were people who died in horrible ways. But this change in the law does not take away any type of punishment aspect. Simply what this does is say to the rest of the country that, yes, we will send people to prison, but we will have some sort of option to at least take a step and see, well, is this the right thing to do?
Well,
it's
shortening sentences, conceivably. I mean, that is less punishment, isn't it?
Conceivably, yes, it's true. And actually, to take a step back, in 2012, what Miller actually did was simply, and Montgomery again, did not blanketly bar the option of juvenile life without parole. Michigan has very clearly said in its law that it changed in 2004 that Governor Snyder signed, in 2014 that Governor Snyder signed, said that if a certain offense that would have at one point been mandatorily triggering a juvenile life without parole, which was made unconstitutional by Miller in 2012, that legislation that passed actually changed that to a term of years, from 25 to 60 years, unless a prosecutor seeks a juvenile life without parole sentence. And a judge at that point must conduct a factors test that's delineated in Miller. Now, since that point in time, we've actually seen 11 youth in the state of Michigan that have been sentenced to a juvenile life without parole sentence. Now, frankly, this is against the grain from across the country. We've actually seen states across the country get rid of this sentencing option. Michigan is second highest in the nation, only second to Pennsylvania. We have 350 people who are sitting behind bars right now who have the sentence. Some of them are well into their 60s. And just like Mr. Montgomery in this case, and have been sitting in the prison system for over 50 years, and were arrested for a crime when they committed decades ago, when America, frankly, was a different state.
Are you saying 25 to 60 year sentences are still legal?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
And in fact,
so
that's
very long sentences are still possible under after these rulings.
Not only possible, it's what we're seeing, and that's the trigger. Mm. We're not a 25 to 60 year sentence is in many cases a lifetime sentence.
What's next for the roughly 350 inmates in Michigan prisons who were sentenced to life in prison without parole as juveniles? What is ahead?
Right. Well, according to the United States Supreme Court, they have every single right to have a resentencing hearing, or as the court delineates, to maybe prevent some sort of administrative clogging of the system. Perhaps a parole hearing in some circumstances would be the better option, especially for Mr. Montgomery, or someone like him who has been sitting in prison for decades. And reopening a case hearing would not only take up would nearly be impossible, but frankly, people have passed away, the evidence just doesn't exist anymore, so a parole hearing would be the other option. So that's the next step, that we see we will be seeing resentencing. It does not, again, it does not bar the sentence of life without parole. I think that we should, hopefully see that this will be a rare circumstance where courts in Michigan will be continuing to sentence to a life without parole sentence. It's very clear in this case that when Miller said it is a rare circumstance, this Montgomery case said, once again, it is the harshest possible penalty and it should be very much uncommon.
Kristen Staley is the Deputy Director of the Michigan Council on Crime and Delinquency. We've been talking about the Supreme Court's recent decision to open the door for reduced sentences for people sentenced to life without parole as juveniles. We were also joined earlier in the hour by Jody Robinson with the National Organization for the Victims of Juvenile Murderers. Kristen, thanks for joining us
today.
Thank you.